Napa know-how.
There are lots of amazing cars on the road, but perhaps none more amazing than the paid-off car. It may not be pretty, but the price is right. Heck, if you keep that thing running, it'll actually start paying you. Because with Napa Rewards, for every $100 you spend, you'll get $5 off. So keep your car running longer, stronger with Napa Rewards and watch the savings start rolling in. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Welcome to Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon, Breaking Football, and Grandstand Sports Network. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. That's K-I-S-T. I am here, as always, with my co-host, the Mother of Dragon, the Breaker of Chains, the Lord of Philly, Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
I have no idea how to respond to that intro. I'm Mother of Dragons. I'm still just trying to process this. Where will I keep them? How will I feed them? I have a very small dorm, Michael. But no, I'm doing well, man. It was a great weekend. Obviously, college football is back. Real live football where I don't know the end of the game is back, which is always a thrilling. And, you know, this is it, man. This is the final week. You know, everybody's saying it on Twitter, the final week without football until like February 11th or some other date that I don't want to think about, man. Like, we are well on our way. This is it. Final leg. Home stretch.
So much football to watch. And I did over the weekend. I watched a lot. As I was watching game film for Scouting Academy, I got two screens up. I got a third iPad going. I mean, it was nonstop football all day. Absolutely love it.
Dude, there's no more powerful a feeling than when you've got two screens up, right? I have a second computer and I have a second laptop because I wanted to get a second screen just a monitor. That's infeasible with how much I move around and I travel and stuff. And so yeah. I have two laptops now, and man, you just feel like you're very important. It's straight strokes the ego right away. Like, listen, I am so involved with the world right now that one screen is not sufficient for my needs. That's a power trip right there.
Gotta have multiple screens for college football, especially if you do the type of work that we do with the draft and whatnot. We're actually going to touch on some draft prospects that we saw over the weekend later on. And before we get to our thoughts on the 53-man roster and the practice squad for the Eagles, which is what we're going to be talking about today, I wanted to give a quick shout out to my good friend and technically my boss from Inside the Pylon, Mark Schofield. He recently took over Locked On Patriots, and that is going to be another must listen on the Locked On Network. I also recently appeared on his podcast, Breaking the Plane, for Timeline Takes. And look, there's going to be a lot of talk about the Wyoming quarterback Josh Allen this season and his draft outlook. And I went on a bit of a rant in regard to some clickbait exploitation surrounding his hype. Make sure to check that out. Ben, man, let's talk about it. 53-man roster is set. We know who we got. We know who's on the practice squad. So we're just going to go right down the line. Quarterback, any surprises? We got Carson Wentz, Nick Foles on the roster. And then for the practice squad, we picked up Nate Sudfield, which I was actually talking with one of our listeners, Jeff Schramm. You can follow him at Jeff_Schramm, S-C-H-R-A-M. And he had actually suggested before we brought on Sudfield that we bring him in to take a look at the Redskins playbook because we do play them week 1. So how'd you feel about the cuts and the additions at the quarterback position, Ben?
Yeah, no surprises. Would have loved to have seen, you know, Dane Evans make it onto the practice squad. I made that pretty vocal when we were talking about that moving forward, but that's okay. Yeah, you know, bring on Sudfield. He was for a while rumored to be like, you know, the heir apparent in the event that Cousins, you know, leaves Washington in disgrace, but they obviously got rid of him. So that's not the thought anymore. We'll see if he has anything left. We'll kick the tires, but if not, yeah, provides that nice insight for week 1 against the Redskins.
And look, we kept a bunch of running backs. LeGarrette Blount,
yes, sir.
Terrence Sproles, Wendell Smallwood, Danelle Pumphrey, and Corey Clement. That's 5 running backs, Ben. And we have Byron Marshall on the practice squad. How do you feel about the running back rotation right now?
Very interesting because kind of the middle ground at which I finally arrived, because around like, you know, week 2 before week 3 of the preseason, I was still very firmly in the, you're going to bring Pumphrey on and Clement has not done anything that warrants a roster spot. And after he had a great showing on week 3 and then week 4, he didn't necessarily play too much, which is kind of a reflection that they had seen everything from him they needed to see. You started to get the inkling that Clement was somebody they seriously considered for the roster. And then it became a question of, all right, do you expose Pumphrey to waivers? And at the end of the day, whether or not you think Pumphrey performed better than Clement, which I don't think anybody does, you know, if you think Clement vastly outshined Pumphrey, whatever. I thought it was, you know, Clement was better, but Pumphrey was by no means had a ridiculously poor offseason. no matter like, you know, where you landed on that, you didn't want to expose Pumphrey to waivers. He's a fourth round selection. He's got considerable talent. It hasn't yet translated as beautifully as you'd like to see on the field. He hasn't looked as quick as he has previously. He isn't generating as many chunk plays. You know, he's still transitioning to his returner sort of role and everything. But you don't want to expose him to waivers because he has that talent. And so he's kept. Now, when it comes to the 46 active players that you have on the roster for game day, I don't think you'll see Pumphrey among those players, at least to start the year, right, you know, barring injury, simply because he's, you know, his returner role is already filled by Sproles and Smallwood. Obviously, you'd love to see them get out in kind of those, you know, lightning and lightning sets that we talked about with Pumphrey and Sproles on the field at the same time. But if you're going to keep five backs, do those sets alone warrant keeping Pumphrey active, especially if you feel the need to develop him slowly? Then probably not. Either way, one of Pumphrey or Clement, probably Pumphrey, will be kept inactive on game day. So it's not like you're going to have five active running backs. That would be aggressive. This is just a little excessive.
And then you pair it with the fact that we kept six wide receivers. And you got Alshon Jeffery, Torrey Smith, Nelson Aguilar, Mac Hollins, Marcus Johnson, and then Shelton Gibson makes the team. I was a little bit surprised by that one. And then with the practice squad, however, your boy Greg Ward, your brand, he made the practice squad, so he cleared waivers. And then Bryce Treggs as well. I don't know if we just didn't want to subject, like you said, you're not going to dress everybody. So when it comes to the 46-man roster, you may see Gibson not dress a lot of the time. I don't know how they really plan on integrating him into this offense in the regular season. I was surprised by the Shelton Gibson keep. Were you?
Definitely, he didn't have the sort of a preseason that made him above Bryce Treggs or above, you know, even maybe Greg Ward if you're having that conversation. But it goes back to kind of the point that we made on the negative side of him when we were cutting him, which was if you can do one thing exceptionally well, you always have a space on a roster. And if you can't do that one thing exceptionally well, right, you have nothing to fall back on. And that's kind of the double-edged sword of these niche players. And the thing you have with Gibson is incredible deep speed. And as we saw from his college film, the ability to track the football very well. Now, he wasn't necessarily as successful with that during the preseason. He incurred many, many drops. But by now, this Eagles coaching staff should probably be good with working young receivers through drops. Yeah. At least we hope so. And so, you know, keeping Gibson active, is that, you know, is that a move to prevent him from being exposed to waivers, similar to as it was with Pumphrey, perhaps? Is it also a reflection, I think, on this offense's desire to add a deep component moving forward with the additions of Torrey Smith and Alshon Jeffery? Certainly, I think so as well. I definitely agree. I think it's very interesting because both Pumphrey and Gibson, as bubble guys making the team, bring returner upside. You know, Pumphrey right. got many looks there, even if he wasn't necessarily the greatest. And then Gibson's obviously has punt return experience and upside as well. And so you could very easily see them address in only special teams roles if injuries are brought about. And then they also provide depth at their skill positions on offense. So, you know, classic work, you know, using those final spots to get potential special teams guys.
Right. And obviously, the Eagles are a team that definitely focus on the special teams area, which is why we've been so good at it recently. So that's a good point, Ben. Tight end, no surprises whatsoever there. Zach Ertz, Brent Celek, Trey Burton, and then Billy Brown sticks on the practice squad. And we'll go right into the offensive line. We only kept eight offensive linemen with Peters, Johnson, Halapuli, Vati, Vaitai. Bam, nailed it.
Hey, way to be Mike.
Isaac Seumalo, Brandon Brooks, Chance Warmack, Chase, Jason Kelsey, and Steven the Wiz. And then on the practice squad, we only kept two. So we got Dylan Gordon, which I'm glad to see that he passed through waivers, and we can continue to develop his game as a former tight end. And then the center/guard, Josh Andrews. So how do you feel about only keeping eight active with two on the practice squad, and do you think we kept the right ones?
Very interesting, because Gordon was kept on the 53-man last year. And the thought there was, well, he's got such great developmental upside that we were afraid of exposing him to waivers. That was the thought process back in 2016. Yeah. Now you're at a point where I think he was even more needed on the roster than he was in years past, given the fact that Barber and Tobin are now gone. And yet he was exposed to waivers at this time. And it's not to say that there wasn't space for him, because they did keep, as we said, like five running backs. They did keep six linebackers when, like, you know, I didn't necessarily think Najee Good was worthy of a 53-man roster spot. And so it's interesting. You wonder the extent to which this coaching staff still has faith in Dylan Gordon if he was, you know, treated this way through cuts. You know, we thought again that he'd be protected. I think there's definitely reason for concern. If we had five Ironmen as the starting five positions, then, you know, I'd be a little bit better with three backups and, you know, only one real backup tackle. You know, maybe, you know, Sam Willow played a few snaps at tackle in a pinch last year, and so maybe you have that as your fourth tackle if you desperately need it, but then you're still relocating a guy and you've got another hole to fill. And you know, they've got good interior line depth, so I think that's kind of the thought for that, you know, Armageddon fourth tackle sort of scenario. Yeah, you've got, you know, Jason Peters, who isn't the healthiest guy on the face of the planet. You've got Jason Kelsey, who's old. You know, it is there's a lot of faith in those starting five. We'll put it that way. There's a ton of faith. And as we said in the preseason, they didn't really blow us away. And so offensive line has to be the position that you're watching right now moving into the season, right? No doubt.
And yeah, I was surprised that, you know, a team like Seattle didn't double up on Eagles offensive linemen by trying to pick up Gordon as well, since they like to take former skill position players and put them at left tackle. So he might have been a starter on that team. Who knows?
There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
So we'll go right into defensive ends. Brandon Graham, Vinnie Curry, Derek Barnett, Chris Long, your boy Steven Means, after he got that extension, looked like a lock. And in fact, you know, he was. So that's good right there. And then defensive tackle, Fletcher Cox, Timmy Jernigan, Bo Allen, Destiny Vaeo, and Elijah Qualls, which I believe is exactly how you had it. Is that correct, Ben?
No, I had Alex McAllister making it as the sixth. And right. I hold true that if he hadn't gotten injured and then injury-waived, that maybe, I don't know. That was my prediction. So obviously I think it would have happened. But still, no. So he didn't make it on. I did my math. You should check yours. I was 50 for 53. I had McAllister making it, I had Dylan Gordon making it, and I had one more. Who was it? Okay, so I know. Oh, and I had Nate Gary making it.
Right.
And then I didn't have Clement on the roster. I didn't have Najee Good on the roster. And then I did not have Shelton Gibson. That's right. So I was 50 for 53, which wasn't terrible. But McAllister was one of my misses. Either way, defensive line depth, and we've said 100 times, I'll say it 101st, it just looks filthy. And I'm so excited to see them play, man. I'm so excited.
Two of your misses were because of injuries that we don't necessarily know about. We talked about it with Nathan Gary coming into it, that, you know, he might not make it. I said I wanted him to, hoping he was healthy, but still he passed through waivers and landed on the practice squad, which is fantastic. I believe I had Najee Good making the team, which he did. So the other linebackers are Nigel Bradham, Jordan Hicks, Joe Walker made the team like we talked about. Also Michael Kendricks and my man Kamug Grugier-Hill made the roster as well.
Way to be, Mike.
How do you feel about the... I'm learning a lot, Ben. How'd you feel about the linebacker depth?
Interesting to me that Gary did not make it over guys like Najee Good and maybe even Kamug Grugier-Hill, which I'm a Grugier-Hill sort of guy. But it definitely does interest me that Gary was not brought in over Najee Good, especially because the Eagles have shown such a willingness to cut Najee Good over the years, and he hasn't really... It's not that he came back and was any better than he has been, in my opinion. He was the same Najee Good, which is still like a very serviceable special teams player and a depth linebacker. It's not to reduce the way he plays. But, you know, they must have felt comfortable getting Gary through waivers. I think Gary was never drafted to be a guy who, you know, was going to give you instant production in year one. Obviously, he's a fifth round selection and he's also undergoing a position change. So, you know, like that was never expected from him. But I still, looking at the linebacker depth, I didn't foresee, you know, Gary being cut for the sake of a guy like Najee Good, but he was. So that's an interesting one for me. Yeah, moving into the 2018 draft and checking out linebackers for Eagles is going to be very interesting, simply because Bradham's going to be in a contract year. Kendricks is probably going to be gone. Right. You know, we've said that 100 times, so he's probably going to be gone.
What's the health of Jordan Hicks throughout the season? There's a lot of different factors.
Exactly, and you've got Gary's development, and you know, Joe, your backup is Joe Walker. He's a seventh round pick off of an ACL injury. He is by no means a sure thing, and so I definitely think that linebacker is going to have to be a position that's addressed with some more solid depth and some more draft capital, some more investments moving forward for sure.
Right, and then rolling back real quick, another guy that made the practice squad from a previous position, defensive tackle Justin Hamilton, will be joining the practice squad. And then we move on to the secondary. So let's see. Ronald Darby, of course, still wearing number 35, which, by the way, I don't know if you've seen the list of former Eagles players with the number 35. It is... it kind of confirms all of my suspicions about that number.
Uh-oh.
So here's some of the names, because there's no one really of any kind of quality.
I'm trying to remember anybody, and I really can't. Was Terrell Watson 35 at one point?
Terrell Watson. Terrell Watson. You got that one.
Oh, what's good? All right, I got one. I'm just gonna cut it there. Yeah. I'm gonna quit while I'm ahead.
Casting your chips on that one. Tex Leyendecker, Pete Pijos. Let's see, Mike Coleman, Mark Konechny.
You're definitely just reading names off of some random list, and I'm going to like pretend like I know that they're Eagles.
Edwin Watson, Nick Graham, Macho Harris, Trevor Lindley, Denzel Rice. That's definitely one. You remember that name.
Oh, yeah, Denzel. Very promising.
Forrest McPherson, Dick Bassey, Ray Poig. I don't know how to say that. It's just, dude, it's bad. Perry Harrington. Like, who are these people wearing number 35? Does that mean that that we're due for someone to perform well with the number 35?
It means the co-hosts of Locked On Eagles in 2027 will be reading through that list, and Ronald Darby will be just another name fading into anonymity, man. It's a foregone conclusion. Seal the envelope. It's done.
It's science. Okay, so back to the depth at the quarterback position. Ronald Darby, Jalen Mills, Patrick Robinson, and Rasul Douglas, and newcomer from the Jets trade with Ron Brooks, Dexter McDougal makes the team, and it looks like they want to play him and Robinson in the slot. And CJ Smith also passed through waivers and landed on the practice squad. How do you feel about the depth there?
Feeling good. Like we've been saying, corner feels like it's been shored up. I like that, McDougal performed well enough in that fourth preseason game that I felt that he pushed himself onto the roster, which, you know, when I made my predictions during the time, I thought it was going to be CJ Smith. And then having watched that Jets game, I was kind of at the point where I said, you know what, I think, you know, that having traded for a guy, they definitely think he has roster upside, certainly. And then that Jets game kind of solidified it for me. So glad to see, you know, they've got a guy in the building. It feels Ron Brooksy, you know, kind of what I said on that Friday pod. You know, I don't think, you know, McDougal had that 1 year contract extension. I don't think he'll be here for too long. That's not at least in the plans. But either way, it's a good depth signing. I'm hoping to see my man Rasul Douglas get some starting reps at some point this year on the boundary. Hopefully not under a poor circumstance like an injury or, you know, Mills is really struggling in front of him.
Right.
But I really want to see if Douglas can earn those starting reps on the outside, because once you get Sidney Jones back from injury, oh, we got to talk about Sidney Jones, man.
Yeah.
He's on the NFI list. He can come back after 6 weeks, my dude.
That's right. That's big. It's 6 weeks, and then they have how long do they have to figure out? 3 weeks until
he can. Yeah, 3 weeks.
Okay. Until he can come back, and then they would have to put him on another reserve there as well. But look, I mean, you did a fantastic article on, where'd you do that article for Sidney Jones?
That was Section 215. Yes, sir.
On Section 215, you did a fantastic article on the recovery of Achilles, the amount of time, the chances of re-injury. Sidney Jones got a more current or up-to-date version of that surgery that has produced better results in the small sample size that they have. So it's very possible that you could see, and we haven't talked about it a bunch because I'm kind of like not trying to jinx anything, but it's very possible that you could see him on the field later in the year.
Absolutely. And, you know, going back to Rasul Douglas, I think once Jones and Darby are out in the field together, that's your locked and loaded boundary corners, you know, definitely not the biggest guys. Maybe Rasul Douglas, you know, faces off against size wide receivers more frequently. But I think once you get a healthy Jones and Darby out there, those are locked as your boundary corners. So if Douglas wants to push for any sort of playing time, you know, moving forward, I think he's got to be able to do it within, you know, kind of the first 8 to 10 weeks of the season, which is a tough ask for the rookie, but hopefully he continues to grow during camp, and the time that he sees, he capitalizes on it.
Yeah, once Jones comes back, man, there's a serious competition for that second outside spot, and I can't wait to see it. All right, at safety, pretty standard fare here. Malcolm Jenkins, Ronnie McLeod, Corey Graham, my boy Chris Maragos, my twin. I told you he was going to make it. Ben was all like, he's not going to make it. And I was like, Ben, you're wrong. He's cool. And then Jalen Watkins, who's going to play a little safety, a little cornerback, special teams, all that good stuff. Any surprises there from you, Ben? It was pretty straightforward.
Nope. Safety was easy peasy, man.
All right. And then the specialist, Caleb Sturgis as the kicker, Donnie Jones as the punter and the long snapper. RIP, oh, he's not dead, but Doran Bose leaves the team, and Rick Lovato gets the start there. So that is your 53-man roster and your 10 practice squad players.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/BOOM. BOOM.
What we're going to do now, and we're going to start doing this every Monday, is we're going to start recapping just one player each from the college football weekend and talk about their draft prospects, what's good about them, what's bad about them, just guys to look for, maybe go back and look at throughout the season. My first guy, who I absolutely love, Louisville quarterback Lamar Jackson. He got it done. Saturday night against Purdue? I'm pulling up his stats now, but I think it was something like 30 for 46, had over 300 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, 378 yards. Excuse me. Yeah, he balled out there. Had 21 carries for 107 yards as well. And look, don't call this guy a running quarterback. I've seen his progression just from last year to this first game. His footwork, his poise in the pocket. He runs a pro-style offense. Whatever narrative that people want to put out there about him, about maybe switching to wide receiver when they come to the NFL, I don't necessarily think they know what they're talking about or what a pro-style offense is. And I think a good buddy of mine at Inside the Pylon, Deontay Lee, who just joined us, is going to be doing a piece on how the Louisville offense is pro-style. I just love his game, man. He's a dynamic athlete. Solid arm. Really what you want to see from him is more consistency with his accuracy. I think you saw some of that over the weekend. We'll see as the season goes along. It's something to track, but his footwork was cleaner. He seemed more assured of his reads. Did you catch that game at all, Ben, or were you watching 17 other games at the same time?
Oh, 17 other games at the same time, my friend.
Look, as far as the quarterbacks go, man, and you look at Josh Allen, who had a terrible day in quicksand against Iowa over the weekend. Sam Darnold struggled. And then you look at someone like Lamar Jackson, and with his athletic profile, you think, man, this guy might really have a chance to end up in the first round, and I would not be shocked at all. So, Ben, I know you had one guy in mind. Who is your guy that you looked at as far as draft-eligible prospects?
Right. My guy was, because for NDT Scouting, I was covering the NC State Wolfpack against the South Carolina Gamecocks early, and then I had Alabama FSU late. And so both those posts are up on NDT Scouting. There's about 100 players from Alabama FSU that could potentially come out in the draft, and it was exhausting to try to watch them all.
When you tweeted that out and you were like trying to follow all these prospects, and I'm like, why would you do that with Alabama? Why wouldn't you just sit back and relax and watch the game? And then I saw you drop that piece. So check that out on NDT Scouting. And I was like, oh, all of that makes sense. They screwed Ben over by giving him 1,000 prospects to watch in the same game.
False. So we got to draft which games we wanted to
you
do. And I had the first round pick. And I said to myself, listen, this is the number one and the number three team playing each other. These are some of the most stacked with prospect defenses ever. I'm not going to miss up the opportunity to take the first 27 peek in that gold mine, man. I mean, you know, just going from memory, some of like DeMarcus Christmas, FSU, DeMarcus Christmas and Brian Burns on FSU's line were popping like crazy. They're having a great game. You know what I mean? The front seven depth for Alabama is absolutely ridiculous. DeMarcus Robinson, that kid who got grazed in the leg with a bullet a week ago. He was flashing excellent on. Yeah,
he had a club rip pass rush on one play that was absolutely incredible. I put it on my timeline if y'all want to see it. But yeah, he looks it. What is he? 6'8", 309 pounds. Just got shot in the leg and he's club ripping for sacks. Like it was crazy. Yeah.
He's 10 types of dirty. So that was like, that game was an embarrassment of riches. And it was just it was so much joy to just watch that and scout that and like, you know, have a site like NDT where I'm able to do that sort of work. It was wonderful. But the guy on whom I wanted to focus was actually the guy who backed up Matt Days out of NC State last year. Kid's name is Naeem Hines. He's a junior running back. And his first year at NC State, he actually was featured a little bit more in the running game than he was in his sophomore year. He averaged 5.1 yards a carry in his first year. And, you know, he's involved in the passing game as well. He's very dynamic out of the backfield. But last year, he was heavily overshadowed by Days, who was really a workhorse for NC State. Matt Days is now with the Jets, I believe it is. I'm pretty sure. And so now Naeem Hines kind of has the freedom here to kind of take over this job. He was brought out as the feature back, and he did nothing to lose that job against the Gamecocks. I mean, incredible burst moving around. Has that fluidity in his hips where he can really turn the corner without losing velocity. Runs a little bit upright, but he can bring the thump when he needs to. They were really struggling in the third quarter, NC State, to get offense moving, and eventually they just started feeding him the rock, and he was just ripping off chunk yardage. Just, you know, explosive, catches the football, dynamic sort of guy. And in a class like this one coming up, which has more running backs than you can count.
Yeah,
that can come in and be NFL 1As or just straight ones. You know what I mean? It was fun to watch Naeem Hines because you know this is a guy who's going to have like third or fourth round value, who's going to be available for you so late in the draft. Mm. And so NC State, powerful offense. You know, they've got a good quarterback there and a redshirt senior, Ryan Finley. You know, they've got Jalen Samuels, who's this like halfback, you know, weapon, who's a ton of fun. Going to be really interesting to see how he's evaluated moving forward. But don't sleep on Naeem Hines. Super bursty guy, a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, Himes is definitely fun to watch. And like you said with Samuels, he's their Swiss Army knife. Finley looked really good. So that's a nice team to watch for draft prospects. And of course, you know, we don't know what our running back situation is going to be next year. Is Blunt still going to be around? Is Sproles going to retire? You know, are any of the other guys going to step up? So that's a position that we're going to be watching closely throughout the season. And like, Ben, if I were you and I had a first round pick for something like that, I've been so freaking busy lately, I probably would have picked like Baylor against Liberty to check out my boy from Liberty, the wide receiver, Antonio Gandy-Golden, that went off for 13 catches, 192 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So just a little bonus prospect there for you.
That's a name to check mark right there. That's a fun one.
Yeah, as Liberty upset Baylor. But yeah, look, we're going to be talking about these prospects through the year, and we're going to start to cater them a little bit more to what the Eagles fans should be looking at, just kind of as a predictive type thing. So look forward to that. And to do so, I mean, you're going to have to keep it locked on here, right? On Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.